The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's another flossing episode where we're talking about the fact that we keep hearing show, don't tell. It's like the don't talk about Fight Club rule of writing. But it's said so often without a lot of direction. So we're going to be talking about that. This is I Should Be Writing, Season 17, Episode 55.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. Watching the doctor.
Hi, guys. Welcome to I Should Be Writing, the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. My name is Merle Lafferty, and I've been doing this podcast since 2005. Just had my 16th birthday anniversary. I don't even know what it's called, but 16 years. And I'm still messing stuff up. I've been on Twitch for a year and still messing stuff up. So, little out of sorts right now. Incidentally, this show does run live on Twitch Tuesdays and Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're listening to this on the RSS feed later and you want to come hang out with us in the chat, because I do a little bit more with the chat after the podcast is over for you, then please come on by. Twitch.tv/MightyMer. I wrote notes to myself so I could be on point, and then I forgot what the notes meant. Wow, I need to finish this project, guys. Really do. It's like dominating my whole brain. What I've been doing is first thing on the list, which is finishing my Audible novella. I think I've made it better. I have a rough final draft. I don't even know what the draft is at this point, but it needs a little bit of polishing before I send it in. I've gotten about 9,000 words ready to go, so I'm almost halfway there. So, that and a couple of things to do for Escape Pod and this podcast has been eating all of my attention. And I haven't been practicing my violin, which means I get to have a lesson with my very kind Catholic violin teacher where I mess up and say a lot of bad words. He's never complained, but I always wonder. So, also, one thing I really like to do is I like to celebrate your good news. So if you have any news regarding your creative career, your creative life, or just life in general, because we're trying to find joy wherever we can right now, please go ahead and tell me in the chat. And if you hear this later and you want to tell me a good news thing, please do, and I'll say it on the next show. Yeah, I'm trying to think of good news. I'm productive, and work proceeds on my novella. That's good. So I've been productive and focused on writing this week. So that's good. Also good news, I got one. Tomorrow, The Return of Ditch Diggers with Matt Wallace. We're going to be on at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. It's a dime different than most of my streams because, well, I have to deal with... Matt has a day job, and it'll be 8 o'clock on the West Coast for him. So we're going to meet up at 11 and record. And very much looking forward to that. So that's the good news. Ditch Diggers is returning with Matt. Fire Writer finally made a show after my rejection where I feel comfortable announcing. Got my first rejection on my first ever story submission. Everybody cheer for Fire Writer because that is a big step to take. And it's a painful step to take. And it also means you're doing what a professional writer does. You're sending stuff out and you're getting rejected. And you can do it again and again. And it'll get a little easier. And if you keep persisting, things should improve. So, well done, Fire Writer. I'm very, very proud of you. Because it's not easy. It isn't. But that's why we celebrate it. Because we want to celebrate the little bit of that is good. Which is... You're doing it. This is the pro writing lifestyle. Like it or not, that's part of it. Underpope says, no good or bad news for me, but I am up to 73 submissions for the year. Wow, Underpope. Still amazed. I forget, do you have a goal? Are you like shooting for 100 this year? Are you just like mass submissioning all over the place? Either way, it's cool. Lee says, my niece turned 18 on the weekend. For her birthday, she asked to get her nose pierced, so I may be dead in a month. Oh, okay. What are those family members? Awesome. Does your niece's parents know? Although, being 18, they can't say anything. They can say things, but... Anyway. Sailor Kelty, did I say that right? For the first time ever, I feel like I have too many writing ideas and the struggle is deciding which thing to write. That is pretty cool, actually. That's when I usually write down all the ideas and then try to see which one's speaking to me. But Wednesday, 11 a.m., Ditch Diggers. And I'm hoping we can stay with that time and schedule. Because, I mean, moving to Twitch has at least kept me producing more content than I ever have, except for maybe 2007 or 8. So, doing the live thing has its benefits. The Founder says, in January, I challenged my writing partner and myself to write a trilogy by year's end. Wow, that's a big challenge. I just started the first draft of book 3. Wow, I'm impressed. Are each of you doing a trilogy, or are you working together? I guess if it's a challenge, you're not working together. Anyway, that's amazing. Well done. 100 for the year is Underpope's goal. Okay. Leading the charge on a new sci-fi group in Milwaukee? Hildyrdic? I am not saying your name right. I'm pretty sure I apologize. But welcome. Glad to have you here. And I'm glad you're doing a new sci-fi group in Milwaukee. That's excellent news. That's great. Just, you know, be careful with, you know, people and Delta strain and all that. But yes, it's very exciting. I always like more sci-fi groups going on. The sister is fine with it. With the nose piercing. Mom's fine. Dad may not be. Yeah, my dad didn't want me to get a tattoo, so I waited until he was done helping me pay for college, and then I got a tattoo. And he hasn't said anything about it, so. Okay, you're working together on the trilogy. You're doing the first draft. He takes it and makes it good. There's something to say about first drafts, really. There is. You know, don't sell yourself short, because it's pretty cool. That's still so much work. What are the word counts? I'm curious. Anyway, last call for good news. I'm loving hearing all of this. It makes me very happy to know there's things out there worth celebrating. It is excellent, excellent. This makes me want a writing partner. Well, actually, this is very funny because that is actually our sponsor today. And so that is possibly the best segue I could have asked for. So thank you. So we're sponsored this week by Scribophile. And I was excited to have them contact me because I had people always ask me how they can find a writing group, especially now during pandemic times, finding a writing group or a writing partner or beta readers or whatever you want to say. And I mentioned a couple of sites I used a million years ago, but I wasn't really up on what people were doing these days. And then Scribophile contacted me. So they're a critique-based community, which means members sign up and post their work in progress, short story, novel, poetry, screenplay. Other writers give them feedback on how to improve it. We've served over 1.3 million critiques for writers, totaling over 552 million words of feedback. So members join to improve their writing, in general, their skills, to help on projects like novels. It's where you can find your people. And they are mentioned on NaNoWriMo's website. It's in several, you know, a lot of people do the best 100 sites for writers. I've never made that list, but Chuck Wendig has. And also in Writer's Digest, best list for writers, best sites for writers. And I was checking out the levels of membership, and there's a free level that looks like it's pretty doable if you're just getting started. And the paid level is, they have a lot of functionality. So yeah, scribophile.com. I'll have that in my show notes on merverse.com, and you can see it in the chat right now. So thank you for the sponsorship, and thank you guys for listening. So I'm doing my next flossing episode. I'm calling this the flossing episodes because we hear these rules in writing over and over again. And we know they're good for us, but we end up resenting them. We end up not doing them either out of spite or out of wanting to get it done and not wanting to pay attention to the details. And it's just a lot like me knowing that flossing is good for me and not doing it every day. So that's why I'm calling these flossing episodes. It may be a stretch metaphor, but it is my stretch metaphor. And so today, we're going to do Show, Don't Tell. Show, Don't Tell is, you can say something, I always consider it as, you can look down on something from really high up, and you can see there are two people in a house. The ceiling's glass. Just go with me here. There's two people in a house, and they're having a conversation, and it looks pretty angry, and one of them throws a plate, and the other one throws a baseball bat, and then it just, you get a brawl. That's telling. Showing is getting into the house, knowing which room they're in, knowing whose grandmother's vase is about to get shattered when the baseball bat comes. Why they're throwing baseball bats and really violent, I'm not sure, but we'll come up with that later. And we know their names, and we know what they look like, and we know what they're fighting about, and we know the words they're using. When a writer's really good at this, they can make you not only feel, smell, taste, whatever is going on in the scene, but they can also make you want to read more of it. It's sort of effortless. And it's not a boring, he picked up the cup, he put it to his lips, he drank, he put it back down. That's actually where I tend to disagree. And all these writing rules, they have their exceptions. But once you start giving exceptions to beginners, I'm not saying you're a beginner, you might be, I don't know. But my point is that reason why we say these like overarching, all-encompassing rules is because you need to understand the rule before you learn what instances you can break it, in which you can break it. So you want to think about the most important parts of your scene. So we've got our people having the fight with the plates and the bats. I'm just going with it. And you have, after the guy throws the bat at his brother, he storms out. you can say. He threw the thing, he said something really rude that I don't say on this podcast, and they, and he stormed out, slamming the door behind him. If you were to take show, don't tell on this scene, you would say he threw the bat, he put his hands in his pockets, he took 5 steps across the room, shuffling his feet in the 2-deep carpet. He reached out his hand. He grasped the doorknob. I mean, you see where I'm going here. It's like, you don't need to see every step. You don't need to see the turning of the doorknob unless it's something you slow the scene down to build tension. If there's something scary on the other side, then maybe. That's the problem, is there's always something contextual about these rules. They're not just, this is a flat rule that you need to follow. And I think with show don't tell, there's a pacing thing. I should cover pacing at some point, but it's still one of those things that I feel like I'm good at, but I'm not sure if I can teach it yet. But still, when you have a lot of action, you need to temper it with a chance for your reader and your character to catch their breath. The Hunger Games books are some of the best paced books I've ever read. And, you know, you have a violent chapter, a couple of kids die, Katniss throws yellow jacket hornet things at the bad guys, whatever. And then you've got Katniss and Peeta hiding in the cave, or her putting flowers all around her friend's body, and those are things that slow it down when you want something to slow the pacing down. So sometimes you do need that. Sometimes at the end, there are, I think we were talking about this a couple of days ago. I apologize, I can't remember exactly when, but when a story's over and you're wondering how the people ended up after the story, like after the denouement, do you do a 6 months later? Do you do a year later? And I like it. I appreciate stuff like that. I referenced the holiday with, that's last holiday. It's last holiday, because the holiday was Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz, and last holiday was Queen Latifah and LL Cool J. Anyway, at the end of the last holiday, you get a 6 months later, or maybe a year later. Anyway, you get a sum up at the end, and in the movie, it shows photographs of the character and then where they are now. And that's telling. But we just went through the entire movie of seeing all the details that were important to that story and then finding out. We don't need to find out how someone started a new business. We don't need to find out the work someone went into to move to another country. That's not the story we're trying to tell. But it's information that people appreciate. For some reason, I'm thinking of, if you've ever seen or read the book Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, there's a scene where there are 3 babies. One is the baby of 2 regular parents. One is the child of a visiting American diplomat, and one is the Antichrist. And so there's a little switcheroo, and the nurses are not communicating with these satanic nurses are not communicating with each other, and all the babies get switched around. And they point out that I don't think this made it into the show, but there's something like, we're not going to tell you what happened to the third baby. The Antichrist went with the regular couple. I think the regular couple's baby went with the Americans, and the Americans got the regular British baby. No, wait. I don't know. See, it was confusing. Shell game. Just a big baby shell game. But they point out that, so you know, one is being raised in England as the Antichrist, or not as the Antichrist, but as a regular English boy. One is being raised in America with all of the luxuries a diplomat's son can have. And then they sort of say this dire, you don't want to know what happened to the third baby. Perhaps you just like to think that he grew up and lived a pleasant life and perhaps collected exotic goldfish. And then later on, when we discover there's another boy mentioned in the book who's a bully to everybody, it says, and nobody knew that he collected exotic goldfish at home. See, we told you, everything with the other baby was fine. And we don't need to know all about that. That is like a telling detail off to the side that makes the story richer. So it's the way you find out is how your book is doing or your story is doing with regards to show don't tell. Read it with the concept of pacing in mind. Do you find something that slows you down? And it's in a boring way, not in a catching your breath kind of way. If you find something like that, then likely you need to either make it more active or take out details and just do the telling part. The couple didn't speak again that night. That's telling. The flight was uneventful. That's telling. You can use the telling part to bridge some gaps. I feel like I need to reread The Hunger Games and The Martian, because both of those are paced brilliantly. The Martian almost never lets you catch your breath, except when he's talking about the potatoes and the feces. But it is a... Oh, thanks for the follow. I enjoy the potato feces talk. Well, yes, it's done very well, but it is a nice break between, oh God, I'm alone on Mars and I'm going to die, and oh God, I'm alone on Mars and I'm going to die in a different way. Because Andy Weir wrote a brilliant book. But let's take the potato feces theme. If you haven't read it, I can't remember how much was discussed in the movie. I only saw the movie once, but Mark Watney is stranded on Mars. His team was trying to take off during a storm, and he got blown down a hill, and they figured he was dead, and they had to leave because the shuttle was going. They had to leave then. And he wasn't dead, so he's trying to figure out, like, food and shelter and water and everything. So he realizes that if he keeps a potato farm thing, then he can keep making potatoes, and that will be food for him. And but he goes into aware of the fact that the Martian soil is pretty much dead, and so there's a lot of discussion about how he takes his own waste to make the soil richer, to make a good planting composition for his potato plants. And it goes into detail. It goes into a lot of scientific detail. Sometimes in science fiction, and you got to know your audience, people really love it when you go into excruciating detail about whatever scientific thing you're putting in your science fiction. There's a scene in... there's a Kim Stanley Robinson book that came out right before Six Wakes did, and I can't remember the name of it. But I was reading it, and he uses mother telling daughter as a way for a writer to tell us exactly how their propulsion works and how they're going to decelerate later. And that's Kim Stanley Robinson. It's kind of a thorny issue, I think. Maybe if you're really unsure, then try to write as much detail in a scene that you can, and then see where it bogs down. Because there's probably places you can cut and reduce word count by just saying thing that happened, not the details. We don't know the couple who don't speak for the rest of the night. We don't really need to know what they're watching. We don't need to know if someone did a chore. We don't need to know who drank cocoa and who drank alcohol before dinner or after dinner or whatever. It's like the bare minimum is we got a couple and they didn't talk last night. So let's move on to tomorrow and see what the fallout is. So I think I'm coming around to telling myself that the show don't tell thing is not necessarily about description, but it's about pacing. I think I have to think about this more. Anyway, if you have any questions about showing and telling, please put it in the chat or email me later and I'll address it on a future episode. Later on this week, we're going to talk about passive voice. But for now, we're just talking about showing and telling. You'll get a feel for when it's right to do what level of detail. And if you don't have that feeling, then throw in a whole bunch of detail or write it bare bones and flesh it out later. But don't let misunderstanding the rule slow you down. Because fixing that is something that's a lot easier to do in edits than sit there and stare at a paragraph and wonder if it's active enough. And yes, under Pope, the passive voice will be addressed in a later episode. The host will talk about it. It will be talked about by the host. I can't remember. There's a good question. Hi, Ravens Creations. When asked for feedback from a new writer and their piece is littered with tells and they just don't understand the concept of show don't tell, how would you approach that conversation? When I'm giving feedback on let's just be honest and say, a piece that's not that good. Or, no, I should be more diplomatic and say, on a piece that needs a lot of work. If there comes to be so many issues that you know that addressing them all will crush the person, then you take one of them. You take one of the issues and say, this issue, this telling part happens a lot in your novel or your story. And then give them a couple of examples where it happens and where you'd like to see something a little bit richer with the narrative. And don't worry about anything else in the story, unless it is another place where there's too much tell and not enough show. But see, you can tell them they make the mistake a lot because it's one thing. And if they can fix that one thing, then that is a lot easier to do than you did show don't tell. The characters have very little dialogue and the dialogue doesn't sound genuine and this really has no conflict. Or it does have conflict, but it doesn't have a resolution to the conflict. And I really hated your main character. That's way too many pieces of critique. So, you're saying you're dealing with one problem, and that's the tell part, and then mark it in the manuscript where you think they could fix that. That's a really good point, Tree Lobsters. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was about 50-50 show-tell. Tons of narration. And that's true. There's stuff from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the book within the book, where it reads like an encyclopedia. And it tells you all about these interesting aliens on this other planet that you'll never see again. And then it goes back to the story. But that was Douglas Adams. Now I'm sad. Anyway, I'm going to end this right now for the RSS feed and talk to chat a little bit longer. Thank you for listening, and you can see me live on Twitch, twitch.tv/mightymur. You can, my brain is not working today. It's not braining today. My socials are pretty much Mighty Mur almost everywhere. You can support at Patreon, Jemmy, Ko-fi. All those links will be in the show notes, as will the link to our sponsors, Scribophile. And you can see anything you didn't catch in this episode on the website, murverse.com. So thank you for listening, and you should be writing.
I do this to myself.
This podcast is brought to you by my Patreon supporters. If you would also like to join the Ink-Stained Fabulists, go to patreon.com/mightymur.
On that shelf, on the spine of a paperback.